It's the Dry Heat Check with Jay Cohen and Espo. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. It is episode 17, which is going to be predominantly a Suns preview show. So we are going to give the name of this episode to one of the most famous 17s in Suns history, and really one of the more, the first Hispanic,
like trailblazer.
Trailblazer.
Not of the Portland variety.
But of the NBA variety. Horacio Yamas.
I thought we were going to go with Mario Elie. We're going with Horacio Yamas.
We could
Yamas,
not
huh?
give Mario Elie any sort of, even if he played for the Suns.
He did play for the Suns.
Yeah, no, Horacio, I said, yeah, even yeah, if yeah. he did play for the Suns, we're not going to give him any pub here. But Horacio Yamas gets the nod, naming episode 17.
Hey, one of the first, or the first, Hispanic-born player in to make the NBA. His full uniform from that season is in the Hall of Fame, so technically kind of a Hall of Famer.
But in a
very
roundabout
obscure,
way.
So that's why we're having him as the name of this. And fun fact, met him last year, have the Fast Break magazine that was on the cover of signed in my home office.
And I know he kind of popped up again recently because the Suns are going to be playing in Mexico City, and yep. I think they're bringing him back to be involved in that transition. They play the Spurs this season, I believe, right?
Yeah, he's been kind of an ambassador when it comes to the Hispanic community here in Arizona and in Mexico. So he'll continue to be an ambassador for the games down there this year. And it should be an interesting experiment to see how the Suns giving up two home games to play in Mexico will play out.
Other notables who wore the number 17 in a Suns uniform, Mario Elie, that you mentioned. Smush Parker had
oh,
that.
Oh, the great Smush Parker.
The great Smush Parker. Paul Shirley. Lou Amundsen, who was probably the runner-up for the episode naming.
The greatest ponytail of all time. And you know what? I'm going to make a confession here. I have never admitted this publicly.
Okay.
Never.
You have a crush on Lou Amundsen?
No. Everybody did. Did you see that hair? Those flowing locks? Of course.
Pretty amazing.
Everybody had a man crush on Lou Amundsen. But there was a little Twitter account back in the day called @LouSPonytail that basically had fun with Lou Amundsen. That was me.
That was you.
And I actually had Pert Plus, the shampoo company, reach out to me about having Lou Amundsen do some kind of sponsorship deal with them. And I had to tell them there is no affiliation with Lou Amundsen. I used to talk as if I was his ponytail from said account.
That's one of my favorite stories that you've told.
So confession time right there. There's a few more of those kind of accounts out there that I've done, but we're not divulging.
But you can neither confirm nor deny. P.J. Tucker, the last one at 17, who currently wears that number.
The garbage man, P.J. Tucker.
Cardinals. Al Del Greco, the original kicker of the Cardinals. And then a run of mediocre quarterbacks when you talk Chris Chandler, Dave Craig, and Dave Brown, and then rounded out with punter Mitch Berger.
Okay, let's be honest. Don't be so mean to Chris Chandler. He was okay.
And he ended up being very good after the Cardinals with the Falcons. He took them to a Super Bowl.
But back in the 90s, Chris Chandler, until Jake Plummer showed up, was kind of the gold standard, which is scary. Dave Craig, all I remember about Dave Craig is he had a stinger in a game. And that's all I remember about Dave Craig. And Dave Brown, I remember he played for the Giants, and I don't remember Jack about him playing with the Cardinals.
Backed up Plummer, and then I think he was still there after Plummer went on to Denver and was a starter for a season or a few games at least.
I don't know, but that tells you everything you need to know about those quarterbacks.
17 is a pretty awesome number if you're a Diamondback. Mark Grace, Brandon Webb.
That there's a lot of good memories and some questionable ones when it comes to Mark Grace.
And then finally, the Coyotes. Greg Adams, Canadian, was one of the original Coyotes. Ladislav Nagy was on the team for a while.
Sure, I'm sure that's the correct way to say that.
John Moore, Steve Downey wore the number last year, and Radim Verbata on three different occasions. He's now been back with the Coyotes and left. This is now his third stint with the team. He wears the number 17.
I got to get better with my Coyotes. And I'm actually on the Coyotes bandwagon this year. And they haven't won a game since I said that. I said that after their first home opener. They haven't won since then.
I feel for the Coyotes, man. Eric Sorensen and I were talking about this. Talk about getting the wind out of your sails. You have so much excited around the start of a season, a home opener. And then you go on that crazy East Coast road swing, which you're basically gone for a week and a half, almost 2 weeks, and they just happen to lose all five of them. Like, man, talk about popping a balloon at the start of a season.
The best part, though, those games start so early on the East Coast that most of the fans didn't see those games. So all they've seen is the home opener.
Well, the problem is all they've seen, though, also is the record. And they're just like, ah, shoot, we're, oh, no, we suck again. You know, it's that kind of
which thing. Is, that should be on our Arizona sports crest. Is, oh, no, we suck again, because that's how we always feel around here.
We're excited on the show. We're going to be joined by Paul Coro. And again, as mentioned, there's going to be a lot of Suns focus on the show.
And look, Paul Coro just can't get away from me. The poor guy had to sit next to me for five seasons when I worked for the Suns. And then he gets dragged into this thing that we call a podcast. I feel bad for Paul Coro and his designer suit.
The Phoenix Suns, they open up their regular season here tonight. They go up against the Sacramento Kings in their home opener. It's always an exciting time, the promise of a new season. And to be honest, Espo, I feel like the demeanor around this team just feels different. It feels more optimistic. You know, the last few years, it's, oh, we're going to stink. We have to stink because of who's coming up in the draft. This year feels more like, we kind of have those young pieces now from who we've gotten in the draft. Now let's watch them grow and kind of root for them to grow with not as much of a focus on let's just suck so the draft gets here and we can draft someone else. Do you kind of get that vibe? Because it seemed like that the last few years where it's let's just suck this season and draft Ben Simmons, or let's just suck and draft Karl Anthony Towns. You know, this year it's
those would have been great plans. Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
It didn't happen, but they drafted Devin Booker. They drafted Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender. They kind of have the pieces that you hope can be part of the next Suns team that can make a run into the playoffs. And it kind of has more of a feel, to me at least, that I don't need to focus as much on the draft now. I'm more dialed into the young guys that they have accumulated to watch them grow.
Look, I'm going to butcher an old sports quote because I don't have a great memory, but it goes something like this. Everybody's brave and confident until they get smacked in the mouth, all right? And you can give me all this fluff and this great talk and this pomp and circumstance and Earl Watson's love and you know, camaraderie and all that, but when they lose 9 out of 10 or they come out and they get blown out by 40 points, which this team is going to have happen this year with such a young roster, that's when does the vibe feel different. Because it's real easy for a first-year head coach to sound like he's got a great plan and to sound optimistic. It's great for Devin Booker to talk as if this is a playoff team. But none of that will matter unless it's around when the hard times come. And over the last 6 years, the Suns have folded in those kind of situations. When the situation got difficult, this team had locker room issues, had issues between their players and the coach. Now, a lot of those problems, Markieff Morris, are gone from this roster, but you still have to see how this team reacts. Because Earl Watson's message is great. And the rah-rah, you feel good about it when you hear it. But how does it play with these athletes and this team when they're having tough times? Because this is going to be an up-and-down season. Unless there is some miracle that happens this year and Devin Booker becomes an MVP candidate and Eric Bledsoe's an all-star and Brandon Knight is the sixth man of the year and Marquise Chris is the rookie of the year, this is going to be another lean year. It's going to be difficult. So I need to see it when times get hard.
Now, before we shift gears, we'll talk to Paul Coro in just a little bit. The veterans that have been brought in, there's not a lot of talk of them. It's Tyson Chandler still here. PJ Tucker is still here when he comes back from injury. And they added Jared Dudley and Leandro Barbosa in the offseason. What kind of role do you see them playing over the course of the season? You mentioned Dudley already kind of in that stretch four role to start the season, might not be there for long.
Well, look, you bring up the fact that there's not a lot of talk about the veterans. And there shouldn't be, because these guys should get limited minutes when it comes down to it this year. They should be there to teach these guys how to be professionals and to show them the ways to play basketball right and to fill in as bench guys over time.
It's Sun season. We're excited now to talk to Paul Coro, the Suns beat writer for AZ Central Sports. And Paul, to get things started, it's, you know, you've already started the grind with preseason and training camp, but this is the official start to the grind of the season. So how are you feeling? You already in midseason form?
I don't know about me, but I'm ready for games that count. It's been too long covering a lot of summer league and pretend and practices, and now it's time for the real thing. I always like opening night, because especially for a team that hasn't been in playoffs since 2010, I'm not sure there's a buzz that matches opening night.
Let's not lie, Paul. Your suits are in midseason form at least, right?
I don't know. Same old, bro.
Well, before we get into kind of previewing the season, I want to take a step back and take a look at something that happened earlier in this week. Archie Goodwin was released. It came as a bit of a surprise to me and others. What was your take on why it went down and just kind of the reasoning behind it?
I thought it was a possibility going into camp, but then the more Archie played and the more John Jenkins didn't, it started to kind of fade in my mind, honestly. But I think just because, you know, here he is 3 years later, he's still young at 22, but the progression that you'd want to see over 3 years hadn't really happened yet. You know, he's got that great quality to get to the rim. It's an NBA quality. But beyond that, you know, he's an off guard who doesn't shoot it that well. He, you know, just all around sort of impressions to make upon the team during preseason and training camp weren't there. They had already talked to him in the off season about not wanting to be there, not because he didn't like Phoenix or the Suns, but just because he wanted to play. And there's always been guards stacked against him. So you don't want another situation where somebody's unhappy at the end of the bench when they've been trying to create all this unity and chemistry. And John Jenkins is the consummate pro who's, you know, probably worked harder in the offseason than anybody, agreed to have his guarantee date pushed back just to stay around the team. He's a good shooter, and, you know, if called up if needed, you know, he's not a rotation guy, but if needed for a team that wants to jack up 33s a game, it's pretty good to have a 40% three-point shooter there waiting.
Staying on Archie just for a second, Paul, you mentioned it, you alluded to it just briefly here. You know, it was well documented how close he was with the Morris twins and also the fact that he wasn't able to have sustained minutes. Do you think that the personality trait or the maybe his demeanor had a little bit more to do with it than his progression in his play?
Yeah, attitude is a huge part of this. He definitely had some influences from being close to the Morris twins. You know, I was kind of looking for a reaction from them because Archie handled himself well on Twitter when he posted an appreciation for it. And, you know, I just think this idea that they're doing him a favor is kind of a stretch, you know, by releasing him, because there's not any space on other teams. It's going to be difficult for him to land somebody else. There's only one team that's not at the max. Now, somebody could wave a guy and add him, and, you know, we could see that. But at this point, you know, the book's out on Archie Goodwin, and, you know, he's not a point guard, and he's an off guard who doesn't shoot it real well, and he's had 3 years to improve that. And so as flashy as that game winner was at Utah, it came against, you know, their 16 through 20 guys of their preseason roster, basically, and the guy he torched isn't on the team anymore either.
See, I need to keep that one in my playbook as a manager when I have to let somebody go, that I'm doing you a favor. This really is good for you. I got to remember that one, that line. Paul, let's look at this season. I've got to be honest, I have absolutely no idea what to expect. And this is the first time in years that I didn't at least feel like there was some kind of idea of where this team would finish. How do you feel going into the season? What should the fans' outlook be with this team?
Well, I definitely expect improvement, and that's not saying much given 23-59 last year. But but I think more than anything, there'll be a good feeling about the direction it's headed, that they've embraced youth. And I think having a 19-year-old star in Devin Booker kind of pushes the franchise to be open to doing that when you know you're 5-6 years away from his best basketball. So now you have a team with four teenagers on opening night. That's amazing. As far as I can tell, no team's played two teenagers in a season, more than two teenagers in one season, and they have a chance to do it with four. But it's not just a teenager. It's young beyond that. You know, the core, you know, I think most of the roster is 24 or younger. So now you've got Watson in, established as a head coach, some pretty good coaching staff hires and former head coaches, Jay Triano and Tyrone Corbin. You can establish a program. You can once again emphasize defense for the 40th time in Suns history.
don't forget rebounding too. That's another emphasis.
Oh yeah, that's going to be a challenge for this team with the power forwards they have. But so I think there will be some patience required with fans, but I think they'll also be able to enjoy it a little bit more. It's a likable team. It's a team that you can look at and say, okay, I can grow with Marquise Chris while he learns how to play basketball more. I can live with Devin Booker learning how to be a starter for 82 games because, you know, he's my favorite player, you know, most players or most fans would say right now. So I think there's lots of feelings like that. TJ Warren might, you know, get to have his breakout season this year after really having two half seasons so far.
It's Paul Coral from AZ Central Sports joining us here on the show with Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito. Paul, a question for you I have, and this is more of a belief I have. There's so much expectation, and Espo has said in the past, pressure on Devin Booker going to this season. I'm of the opinion, though, all that expectation and pressure should be more so on Eric Bledsoe for the amount of years he's been here, for the injuries he's dealt with, the time that he's missed, hasn't made that all-star team yet. Is it fair to say that this is one of the more important years for Eric Bledsoe in a Suns uniform?
Yeah, it seems like we say that every year since he arrived, though. I mean,
that's true.
The injuries every other year have really put a damper on what he could be. I think everybody agrees he has all-star potential. Grasping the point guard job is one of his biggest hurdles because he's always had high turnovers. He hasn't been a big vocal leadership guy, but he's really turned the corner as far as work ethic and commitment to the program the last couple of years. And so this would be, if he stays on schedule, this would be the year he plays 82.
Yeah.
And I think more than anything that you'd really like to see him fulfill his defensive potential more than anything. He was a great off-ball and on-ball player to get steals. Jeff Hornacek used to say he should lead the league in steals because he's powerful. He's quicker. He's lost 10 pounds. He can get over screens because he's so strong. But he's also going to be asked to be the primary ball handler now. There's no more shared ball handling. So he's going to be pushing the tempo. They want to be, play it the fastest pace in the league if they can. So that's a big task for him to handle the ball handler and get up into him, get over screens and fight. That's going to take high effort. But the indication, he's had a little bit of a rough preseason because he was coming off the knee rehab and hadn't been cleared for 5-on-5 until right before training camp. So he's still working into his shape. I don't think you'll see the true Eric Bledsoe for, the first couple of weeks of the season until he gets there.
Feels like the hallmark of Ryan McDonough's tenure with the Phoenix Suns has been chemistry experiments, and it seems like this year is no different with Brandon Knight now becoming a sixth man, something last year he basically said he didn't want to do. Now he seems to be more willing to, but how do you think that will play out for the Suns this year?
Well, let's be clear. It's nothing he wants to do. He's being willing to do it because that's what his coach and his team are asking of him. So he's not fighting it. And I give Earl Watson a lot of credit for laying that out early after training camp and not letting that linger throughout the preseason as a positional battle. Ever since he took over as interim coach, he's been steadfast that he was going to lay out clear, direct roles and communication about that. So that helped. That being said, it's going to be an adjustment for him. He's never done this in his career. He's not probably crazy about the idea, but they've tried to build him up about him as much as they could. Earl Watson calls him the sixth starter. He calls him the most important player on the team. He says they got to get him at least 30 minutes a game, that he's the sixth man award candidate immediately. So Brandon Knight's got some living up to all that to do, and he's going to do it in a new way. But the moment he has any struggles with it, we know what's going to be attributed to, that he's never done it before.
It's Paul Coro joining us here on the show with Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito. I'm wondering, through the time of all these games that haven't counted and practices that you mentioned, who has been someone that's been a pleasant surprise to you as you've been there every day? Someone that maybe stood out or is impressing, maybe with if it's being a young guy, a little bit quicker, or if it's an off-season acquisition, maybe a bigger role. Who's someone that kind of fits that mold going into the start of the regular season?
Well, I'd say TJ Warren's defense is a lot better. That's noticeable right away, and he's bigger. You know, he's probably 6'9 now, and he's filled out more. So that's one thing that strikes you away. He just carries himself a little bit more confidently. He's always been a quiet, timid guy for the first couple of years again, and he's no chatterbox, but he's definitely coming out of his shell and looking more and sounding more comfortable. But I think the biggest surprise has been Marquise Chris. You know, even the Suns would have to admit that, given that they took Bender at 4 and Chris at 8. Chris looks far more ready to contribute right away. He's got that. He gets an Amari Stoudemire comparison a lot for the things he can do on the court, as far as athleticism, the dunks, the size, the shooting. But to me, the quality he has that Amari had is fearlessness, and that's a really special NBA quality to just be so confident on the court and not, especially as a 19-year-old. You know, he thinks he can dunk on anybody. You know, got into it at Andrew Bogut and threw him on the ground like he, you know, didn't know who he was, although he clearly did. Mm-hmm. he's staring people down. He's got swagger to him. You talk, he's not going to be politically correct. He's got some honesty and personality to him. So I think he's going to be a fan favorite for the way he plays on the court. It's just amazing to me for a guy that's only played organized basketball for 5 years that he has the handles that he does, the shooting touch that he does. The other stuff's going to come along. You know, he's already a better rebounder than he was at college, and he's going to pick up some defensive things over the years. But in the meantime, athleticism can make up for a lot of things.
You brought up TJ Warren. Is it just me, or does he look more athletic even coming off of a foot injury?
He's just so slithery. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's more athletic, but the size strikes me more than anything. But maybe it's the bounce that he got from just working out so much. Although he couldn't work out a lot on his lower body that whole time. He'd roll around in a scooter and go to the practice court and shoot with sitting in a scooter or something like that just to do something. I mean, the guy used to show up at midnight at the gym at NC State just to practice almost every night. He's a total gym rat. So taking basketball away from him for a foot fracture just killed him. And so he's hungry to get back. He's got a starting opportunity because of PJ Tucker's back surgery. And ideally, I think they would like him to hold on to it. You know, he's the long-term starting small forward if he lives up to what they believe he can be. And he looks like a better two-way player than the last 2 years.
Paul, thank you so much for your time. We'll see you down there at downtown Phoenix and have a great season.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
One of the big question marks for me has to be a lot of these teenagers that are on this roster, in particular for me, Marquise Chris. And I don't know how to feel about this guy because going in, I expected him to be the raw talent out of him and Dragan Bender. I thought that he was going to be the one that was a little less prepared for the season than Dragan Bender was going to be, having played as a professional overseas, as Dragan Bender did, and Marquise Chris having so many question marks playing at Washington and how he was going to do. After preseason now, this guy looks like everybody seems to expect him to be the star in terms of this rookie class, the guy that's going to come out and play major minutes this year. I don't know how to feel about it because I still haven't fully bought in on Marquise Chris, and I haven't fully abandoned the Dragan Bender boat like a lot of people have, where they're saying, well, maybe it'll take him 2 or 3 years. Maybe he's that foreign guy that turns into a bust. You're hearing all sorts of things just based on preseason games on both sides of the spectrum for both these guys. I don't know where I land in terms of them right now. How are you feeling in terms of Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender?
Well, I don't feel like you need to be on either side of it yet because they haven't played in actual games. They haven't been part of an actual NBA rotation and they haven't participated in an 82-game season. So I don't think there needs to be any sort of meeting some sort of one side or the other. They're at the point right now where they just, as you've mentioned many times, They need to just get minutes. And the veterans on this team shouldn't play as much significant minutes throughout the entire season. They can start like Jared Dudley is and Tyson Chandler is slated to right now, but they shouldn't be playing crazy minutes each and every night. And if they're in a position to win a game in the fourth quarter and you want to roll with the veterans down the stretch, I'm all for that. Because it is about winning games at the end of the day. But in the meat...
Is it really, though, this season?
They're going to tell you that. They're going to tell you... I mean, honestly, Espo, look at it this way. This season, I've already talked about this. This season, to me, feels more like we have our draft picks. It's no longer thinking about who the next great player in the draft is because we have some pretty great young core pieces. If they can compete for a seventh or eighth seed with the young core that they have, you'd shy away from that because I'm of the opinion that if you get playoff reps already for some of these guys, even if it could help Marquise Chris or Dragan Bender, I'm not saying the Suns are going to make the playoffs, by the way, but if you have the opportunity to win games down the stretch to try to get yourself into the playoffs and get these young guys a taste of what the playoffs are this young, I'm all for that.
I don't try to shy away from making the playoffs, even if it's a seven or eighth seed. What I try to shy away from is giving the meaningful minutes to veterans that aren't going to have any impact two or three years down the road on this team. Yeah. I'd much rather put Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, Devin Booker, even maybe a Tyler Ulis, depending on how he's playing in a game, in a position to actually be in there in crunch time and learn what it takes to win an NBA game down the stretch against top competition.
And there
that's going to benefit them much longer and much better in the long run than playing Jared Dudley or Tyson Chandler meaningful minutes.
And I agree. I'm just saying that there will be nights. Everyone knows this over the course of an NBA season. There are nights when Jared Dudley is going to hit 6 3-pointers through three quarters and they're just going to have to run with the hot hand. There's going to be nights when Tyson Chandler is putting up his random 20 rebound performances and you need him in there down the stretch. There's going to be nights when Leandro Barbosa is having a great game off the bench and you roll with him. That happens with every team over the course of the season. There's going to be nights where Marquise Chris is going off and he's going to be playing way more minutes than his average is going to indicate. I'm just saying when it comes to winning games, there should be games and probably will be games down the stretch where the veterans will play because they have the hot hand. I think Earl Watson will do that because at the end of the day, it's about winning games. It's about trying to advance your franchise, and it's about getting that winning mentality back. Now, it shouldn't come at the expense of never playing these guys, the young guys down the stretch. I totally agree with you there. It's more about on a given night that it could happen.
Well, you bring up that we shouldn't be making judgment calls on either Chris or Bender right now, which I wholeheartedly agree with. But I think one of the problems we're going to see with these two guys as their development progresses is the perception. The fact that both of these guys were drafted in the lottery and it's always going to be comparing the two against each other, which I don't think is going to be fair to either of them, especially in this first season. And we've seen it through preseason. I mean, I've heard analysts talk about former players, talk about the fact that maybe Dragan Bender is a bust. How can we already make some kind of judgment call on either of these guys when we've been through, what, 6 preseason games? Mm-hmm. We're talking about...
In summer league.
Hardly anything that they've already been through, and we're making judgment calls on these kids, and I don't quite understand it. 24 quarters of preseason basketball isn't going to be a determination on anybody's career. Marquise Chris has looked much better than we expected. He hasn't had the mental lapses that apparently plagued him at Washington. There weren't the issues with it, with his motor and his motivation and his rebounding that we saw. But that's 6 preseason games, not an 82-game season. We're going to see the Marquise Chris that we expected to see at times this season, and we're going to see the Dragan Bender that can spread the floor and run the floor and do things that we saw him do in foreign leagues in the NBA this year. It's bound to happen. I'm not comfortable with everybody automatically assuming that Marquise Chris – is a rookie of the year potential kind of guy, and Dragan Bender's a guy you're just going to bury on the bench until he's figured out how to play in the NBA.
Just because they happen to play on the same roster.
You've got to give them both minutes this year because it's about learning and figuring out what you do have in those guys and figuring out how you can help them grow this year. Is winning nice? Yes. But I think it's going to be more of an accident than an actual byproduct of this season, because the only way you're going to win is as long as these young guys are playing well. If they don't play well, you're not going to win with a core of PJ Tucker, Jared Dudley, Tyson Chandler, and you know, with Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight. That core is not going to win without these young guys really performing well.
Let's switch gears and kind of switch the tone of this segment for now. Let's get a little more. What we do here is we like to find, we have the Nicolas Cage spectrum that we've created that for the Cardinals games, for football. Let's create another kind of fictional spectrum to kind of rate the Suns on. And I'm wondering, what side of the fence are you on with these three questions? The first one, is Earl Watson going to be more Coach John Bailey, who was played by Dennis Farina in the movie Eddie? This is the coach that Whoopi Goldberg took over for, that the fans booted out and had Whoopi Goldberg come out of the stands and coach for. Is Watson going to be more of that, or Coach Carter, Samuel L. Jackson from the movie Coach Carter, with the very grand and team-oriented dynamics and coming together as a unit that Earl Watson has looked like?
Neither.
Oh.
You did mention the coach he's going to be more like. He's going to be more like Eddie. He's going to be more like Whoopi Goldberg's character in that movie, where he does things his own way. He's going to throw out all the conventional wisdom that we've seen over the last handful of years, and he's going to try to do things in a way that makes sense to him. He's talked about his lineage and working with John Wooden and the mentality that he's bringing in. This is going to be a very collegiate mentality, which you usually don't see in the NBA. And that's the way he's going to play this out with this young roster. Will it work? I don't know, because these veterans, I don't know if that rah-rah is going to play well with him. I don't know with the young guys if at some point they're going to tune it out. But that's the way he's going to go about it. He's going to be more Eddie than he is going to be Dennis Farina's character from that movie, or Samuel L. Jackson in Coach Carter.
I think he's going to be more like Coach Carter for obvious reasons. The philosophical aspect, the sticking to a plan. I think he's going to be the epitome of a coach that has a plan, and stubbornly enough, he's going to stick to it and hope at the end of the day it ends in results. That's what happened for Coach Carter, and I think Watson's going to have a similar dynamic there. Next question. TJ Warren, we've talked about him constantly, about how he's been really under the radar this season. So is he going to surprise people like Woody Harrelson would hustle people in White Men Can't Jump? Or is he going to stay somewhat unnoticed, especially from a national perspective?
He's going to be totally like Woody Harrelson in White Men Can't Jump, minus the short shorts, the weird tank top, and the fluorescent hat turned backwards. What he's going to do is he's totally going to hustle people, because nobody has talked anything about TJ Warren this year. He has been the invisible man when it comes to young guys on the Suns roster. He will come out and he will completely surprise and completely hustle everybody in the NBA, and Suns fans for that matter, who have not expected much from him.
And I think this is going to be a big year for him as well. Last one for you is, will Marquese Chris, who we've talked about a lot here on this show, will he be more Scott Howard or Teen Wolf this year?
Both. He will be both. As I brought up, you will see the guy that is unmotivated, timid, doesn't play great, the Scott Howard version, if you remember Michael J. Fox, human character in Teen Wolf. We're not talking the new MTV show. We're talking the classic movie.
Oh, of course. We know that about you.
We'll see him as Teen Wolf, the guy that can jump out of the gym, do things that are mind-boggling, and really just shock everybody. And heck, he may even surf on top of a van this year. I don't know, at times. He will be an impressive specimen at times, but he also will look like a teenager at other times.
One more quick before we get out of here. We haven't talked to Alex Len. Alex Len, your overall thoughts on where we expect from him, because like Eric Bledsoe, like Devin Booker, there's a lot of pressure on those guys, as it seems like this is kind of the year where we need to really see something from them. Alex Len, I think, also was in that mold.
Look, you didn't give me a movie, but I'm going to go back to one we already
talked
about. Please do. I'm going to go back to Eddie. You remember Yvonne in that movie?
Yvonne Make Basket.
That has been Alex Len's mentality. He's going to shoot until the ball goes in, and he needs to break himself of that mentality, because I don't need Alex Len to shoot all the time.
You need him to take a charge to win games, right?
Take a charge, get me rebounds, be a defensive force. We need to see that from Alex Len this year. I am almost off the Alex Len bandwagon and ready for the Suns to look for a better solution at center for the future. If he does not perform in the first half of the season, I would like to see them pursue some kind of young guy, use some of their assets, and Nerlens Noel, that type, and try to get in a different young center to help build around in this with this team.
So it's the airing of grievances, Espo, and I have no idea where you're going here. We've talked a lot of Suns here today. We've had some, you know, kind of hot-button topics. We've gotten a little sharp here as we reach the start
of the
Suns season.
Nobody's ever accused us of being sharp. Let's be honest about
that makes, you know, one of us then, I guess. But the airing of grievances, Espo, we haven't planned this. I have no idea where you're going with this, so I give you the floor.
Look, it kind of involves the Suns, because they're one of the points I'm going to make here, but the entire sports world has been focused on Cleveland and Chicago over the last week, because we are now in a World Series that involves two of the saddest franchises in Major League Baseball history. All right? There will be a curse that is broken in the next 2 weeks when it comes to either Cleveland or Chicago.
Which is pretty cool to watch from a fan perspective, but please continue.
What's scaring me is there's one of two things that's going to happen when this curse ends. Either the Cubs win and the Arizona, Chicago, St. Louis Cardinals wind up becoming the team with the longest championship drought in professional sports.
Wow.
Or the Indians win and we officially become the new Cleveland. All right? Because now the Cavs and the Indians will have won in the same year. And I am officially willing to say that Cleveland is no longer a sad sack city. They are actually a predominant sports city. And that would mean that now we would have both the second longest championship drought of 69 years with the Cardinals and the 19th longest championship drought in professional sports history when it comes to the
cities.
Phoenix Suns with 49 years, all right? Then you bring in the Coyotes, who have only gotten out of the first round of the playoffs once, and the Diamondbacks, whose one championship almost bankrupted the team completely to the point where they couldn't pay their payroll a few years later. We will become the new Cleveland. We are a fire on Tempe Town Lake short of becoming the new Cleveland if the Cleveland Indians win the World Series. And I am not prepared to live in a world, actually, honestly, I'm not prepared to live in a world where either the Cubs and Indians are world champions, but I have to, accept
you have no choice.
That is going to be what happens, right? And that my daughter will enter into a world where one of these teams now has a championship under their belt. But I am seriously not prepared for Cleveland to be a happy sports city and Phoenix, the place that I've called home for 30 plus years and that I have a great connection to, will now be one of the saddest cities in all of professional sports with no real end in sight, because the Cardinals were a great hope. And let's be honest, the Cardinals aren't winning a Super Bowl this year. All right? They hit snake eyes on the Nick Cage spectrum. You didn't think we were going to get the Nick Cage spectrum.
No, we got it in.
We got it in. They basically had a game that was neither a win nor a loss, but was so putrid and uncomfortable in a tie to Seattle that you don't know what to do. All right? We now are in a spot where there is no real hope for a championship anytime soon. Because the Cardinals, I don't think, will be very good next year, because Carson Palmer is a year older. He's gone through the Jake DeLome phase of his career, which we were afraid of, and I think he's fully in the midst of it. Larry Fitzgerald may or may not be back, and everything that you pin your hopes on is David Johnson now, and we know the lifespan of an NFL running back is very short.
Well, and you just said to yourself, the quarterback position is uncertain, so that could lead to questioning the results of a team whether he's back or old or if he's gone altogether.
So who's your real hope now? The Coyotes and the Suns winding up figuring out how to get their youth to work, because the Diamondbacks can't get out of their own way. All right? They just can't. So now you're hoping that the Suns figure it out with a bunch of teenagers, or the Coyotes figure it out with a bunch of youth and no real place to call home. This isn't a good situation. We will become the new Cleveland if the Indians win the World Series. And frankly, that scares the crap out of me.
So not just because your wife is a Chicago person and a Cubs fan, you're also, for that reason, a big Cubs fan during this World Series for this airing of grievance.
God, I really hope that somehow the World Series ends in a tie like that Cardinals game, and we don't have to crown either of them, but if I have to pick one, I'm picking the Cubs.
I honestly think that just the mere fact of them making the World Series has them less of a depressing of a sports town, because this is a team that wasn't even supposed to make the World Series this year.
Let's be honest. Chicago can't be a depressing sports town. The Blackhawks have won. The White Sox have won.
And then you
look at the Bulls winning six, and they had Michael Jordan.
But it's the Cubs.
But even their fans weren't sad. They were the lovable losers. Like, they weren't even depressed that their team has
because
sucked
they've just
for
embraced
100 plus
it.
Years. They embraced it. We don't embrace that here. We need therapy. It's so bad at times. I can't accept a Cleveland Indians championship, and that meaning the Cavs and Indians now both are champions of their sport.
This is the Dry Heat Check podcast. That's Greg Esposito.
You don't have to call it podcast. We talked about it. Another airing of grievance for you.
This is the Dry Heat Check with Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito. You can find us on sports360az.com. You can find us on Audio Boom. You can find us on iTunes. Leave us a review, right?
Please leave us a review, although I don't care that much anymore.
And you can find us on Twitter, at Dry Heat Check. You can find us on Instagram, at Dry Heat Check. And you can find Facebook, facebook.com/Dry Heat Check. I wanted to do it for you this time.
You got it right.
Because I've been practicing. Was there anything I was missing?
No, but you should do it in front of a mirror so we really get the mojo
and so I could see how weird I look while I'm saying it, too.
It is very weird.
Did I look really weird just now?
That.
Again, that's Greg. I'm Jared. It's the Dry Heat Check.